The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
Hello and welcome to the Colombia Calling podcast. On this, episode 420, Richard McCall sits down with Latvian immigrant to Colombia, San Liev, to discuss the sacred ritual of ayahuasca and its properties. We hear how an engineer working on oil rigs in the North Sea has transplanted himself to rural Antioquia. But first, your top news stories for the week with me, Emily Hart. The latest polls suggest there will be a second round presidential election this year. No candidate looks to gain 50% in the first round, scheduled for late May. Polls give Gustavo Petro, leader of left-wing coalition Pacto Histórico, 35% of voting intentions. Federico Gutierrez, leader of right-wing coalition Equipo por Colombia, has 24%. Centrist leader of the Centro Esperanza coalition, Sergio Fajardo, has 10%. However, polls also do suggest that around 20% of voters in Colombia are still undecided. After the controversy around March's legislative elections, more than 5,000 voting stations will receive new voting jurors for the presidential vote, particularly stations where it was found that there were human errors or possible irregularities in the March vote. There will also be a drive to appoint more experienced jurors. Additionally, the Attorney General has announced an investigation into National Registrar Alexander Vega and the possible irregularities in contracting and possible negligence in his function during those March elections, which may have led to the discrepancies. And the scandal deepens around the military operation in Putumayo, which reportedly killed at least 4 civilians amid a massacre carried out by the army in the village of Alto Romanzo on the border with Ecuador. The official version had stated that 11 FARC dissidents had been killed in the operation and 4 more had been captured. But claims emerged from the Ombudsman's Office and human rights organizations that at least 4 civilians were killed in the operation and were initially presented as FARC dissidents. Witnesses have reported to numerous local and international media outlets that masked armed men dressed in black attacked the village, and that soldiers later fired indiscriminately on fleeing residents. Others claim that evidence, including bodies, was tampered with by the military. Watchdogs are demanding that the army clarify who the victims were and how the operation was carried out. Senators from various opposition parties are demanding that Defense Minister Diego Molano answers for the operation. In this area of Lower Putumayo, 22,000 hectares are planted with coca leaf, and there are 2 armed groups fighting for control of drug trafficking on the border with Ecuador. Comandos de la Frontera, made up of FARC dissidents from the so-called Segunda Marquetalia, along with demobilized paramilitaries. And, on the other hand, the Primero Carolina Ramírez Front, another wing of the FARC dissidents linked to alias Gentil Duarte. This operation aimed at finding alias Bruno, leader of a faction of the Comandos de la Frontera. The recent killings are being dubbed false positives by social organizations, harking back to the Colombian army's practice of extrajudicially executing civilians and passing them off as combat kills during the country's civil conflict. One of the men due to testify at the Special Justice Tribunal, the JEP, over that original so-called false positive scandal, has been expelled from transitional justice due to currently being imprisoned in Haiti, accused of responsibility for the assassination of President Jovenel Moïse, shot 12 times in his home on the 7th of July last year. Francisco Eladio Uribe Ochoa is one of the 18 Colombian former soldiers being held over that crime. In Colombia, Uribe Ochoa was being investigated for the murder of two men from Medellín's Comuna 13, who were allegedly tricked, abducted, murdered, and then registered by the army as combat casualties in 2008. The prosecutor's office had issued an arrest warrant for him, which was not carried out, as he requested and was granted a trial at the HEP. Meanwhile, in front of the US Justice Department, another former Colombian soldier has pled not guilty to conspiracy to commit the kidnapping and assassination of Haiti's president. Mario Palacios' lawyer told reporters that Palacios was not aware of what was being planned, even when he reached Haiti with the team. The Supreme Court has given the green light to the extradition to the USA of Dairo Antonio Usuga David, alias Otoniel. Otoniel is wanted by the US justice system for drug trafficking, murder, and the use of firearms. Otoniel led armed group the Clan del Golfo, also known as the Autodefensas Gaitanistas de Colombia, Colombia's largest criminal organization. He was arrested in October last year after nearly a decade of attempts to capture him by the Colombian government. Otoniel was not accepted by the Special Justice Tribunal, though victims demanded that he not be extradited due to information he claimed he was willing to share, particularly about the false positive scandal and the collaboration of numerous top military figures with paramilitary activities during the armed conflict. He also claims to have evidence of how politicians, cattle ranchers, businessmen, and civilians participated in the armed conflict, including collaboration with armed violence against land claimants, human rights defenders, and social leaders. It is unlikely that his victims in Colombia will see justice once he enters the US system. Meanwhile, a drug trafficker from the Mexican Sinaloa cartel has been captured in Cali. Brian Donaciano Holguín Verdugo, known as Pit. According to the Colombian police, Sinaloa cartel boss Ismael Zambada had sent Pit to southwest Colombia to negotiate drug shipments with dissident FARC guerrillas, part of the Southwest Coordinating Command, a federation of groups which controls cocaine production facilities and trafficking routes in the region around the city of Cali, in the department of Valle de Cauca. Those were your top stories for the week. Thanks for listening.
And we're back. This is episode 420 of the Colombia Calling Podcast. I'm Richard McCall here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And this is episode 420, as I said. And my very special guest is Sam Belief, and he's in rural Antioquia, and we're going to discuss ayahuasca, or as it's known in Colombia, yaje. We've done an episode on this many months ago with an academic. It was episode 291, where we explored traditional medicines. But right now, we're going to look at Sam, who's originally from Latvia, but now is a transplant to Antioquia, and who has set up a ayahuasca retreat in, outside of Medellin. So welcome on the Colombia Calling Podcast.
Thank you, Richard. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you.
Report 1,450 meters closer to sun. So
okay, so but a bit warmer than here, definitely, than Bogota. But listen, this is an amazing story. I know a little bit about your past, not a lot, but I know that you worked in sort of oil and gas. So good exploitative, extractive industries, and you must have had some sort of epiphany in your life to turn it all around to get into, I guess, what would we say, spiritual, ancient medicine. Tell us a little bit of how a Latvian ends up in rural Antioquia.
Yeah, well, it was not as smooth, and there was not like one single moment where I just went from working oil and gas and to just basically being a spiritual, but it was a gradual transition. It took me about 5 years. Yeah, I worked with a lot of people from your part of the world in UK. We worked in North Sea. I worked in both offshore wind and offshore oil and gas. And you just sit there on a piece of metal for 4 weeks at a time, do a boring, stressful job. It pays a lot, but I never liked it. And it was soul crushing. So eventually I saved some money to travel for a year. My goal was to travel through South America, beginning in Colombia, but then I did Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, and I like Colombia so much. I came back to Colombia, and from then on, I started coming more and more back here. Till eventually, I settled here, and now I live in a finca in the countryside. I have a wife and one son, and one more on the way. Two dogs, you know, the whole typical setup. You know, American dream in a way in Colombia.
Well, congratulations on that. Congratulations. So you've moved from oil rigs in the North Sea to again the beautiful countryside of Antioquia, and I mean, what happened? What happened to create this? Well, I guess it's you completely flipped your life on its head. Really, what happened to you to turn your back on good income, stable employment?
Yeah. So, what happened to me was that basically, for a few years, I was living off my savings, and I'm lucky to have some passive incomes streams. So basically, I didn't need to work, but I felt that I was like useless and not really like I couldn't understand why I was here and what it was all about. And even though I was like living a dream on the surface, like anyone would envy that kind of lifestyle, I was like empty inside. So I turned to medicines because I've heard about them, and I started like drinking the ayahuasca for myself. And at first it made me feel better, made me reconnect with the you know, beauty around me and understanding, you know, that life is actually good. Till eventually one time I had a revelation during one of the sessions in the jungle that led me to the lifestyle I have now, which is, I mean, my background is engineering, so I'm still a very rational person, but more and more I use those woo-woo terms and spiritual stuff because, you know, when you work with it for so long, you just have no choice but starting to believe the things that are happening around you. But yeah, if you want, I can tell you that story.
Tell the revelation.
It gives me the goosebumps even, you know, every time I talk about it, I think about it. So I think it was my seventh time drinking medicine. It was first time I went to the jungle to do it. It was like a 4-day retreat, and I think on the second day of drinking the medicine, I went to this deep space. Basically, my ego dissolved, and I just went to this like level of consciousness where, from what I understood, it was like lifting a bonnet on a car and looking at the mechanism. So like how everything works in that world. And maybe that's my background, you know, because I used to work with engines. And it basically showed me that. And I went to this world. There were entities there for sure, because a lot of people talk about talking to entities, but I didn't talk to them. They basically told me they were busy. So like, you know, you've seen us go away. We're very busy. And then when I started coming back to the reality, I started chanting like indigenous chants. And I mean, I don't know any indigenous languages, neither I know their music. Like it was my first time in there. And it was very bizarre because it was not me singing. I was just observing myself sing those indigenous sounding chants. And then when I finally stopped singing, like it started giving me those images of like healing and like methods and like rules for doing it. So basically it was showing me that I can be a healer, and it showed me how to do it. And the message was like, it's hard to explain like how ayahuasca talks to you. And we can talk about as well, who talks to you and who it is you talking to. Like there's different theories, but basically the message is clear. It's not words. It's not images. It's like a mix of all. It's like like the clearest way, just the fastest way to pass the information. And you just get it. And that was my message. So I was shown how to heal with my hands, and it was very woo-woo for me. It still is. But at the same time, at this group that we were in, there was this French guy, and he had the headache. So he drank the ayahuasca, but he didn't experience anything. He had one of those times when, you know, people drink and they don't feel anything. It's very frustrating. But he got a huge headache, and he was walking around asking for for a pill. And then the medicine told me that I can help him. So I came to him slightly back from my experience. And I said, like, dude, I'm sorry. The medicine is telling me to do something strange. Like, can I do it? He said, yeah, sure. And when I was seeing him, instead of like, I could see like an orange triangle in his forehead. Basically, that was, to me, it was understanding that it was pain. And the medicine told me to put my hand on his forehead and another hand on the floor, which is made from the, you know, the dirt. It's dirt floor. It's like a medicine house in the jungle, like a hut. And then it told me to basically suck his pain, pass it through me and put it in the ground. So I did this for about 15 minutes. It was like a effort. Spiritual effort, which, you know, I don't know. It's hard to explain. But after that, his headache went away. But the funniest part is that he was drinking the medicine, but he didn't feel anything. After that, he stood up to go to the toilet, and he couldn't reach the toilet. He just fell on the floor, and he started tripping so hard that, you know, he pooped himself, pretty much. So that's the story.
Wow. This is quite... So, but you were both... You were both under the effects of the ayahuasca at this time.
Yes, we both drank the ayahuasca. I was definitely affected by it much, but he was not. He was just walking around and acting normally. And he was complaining that, you know, he didn't feel anything. Mm. But something I've done, or maybe a coincidence, I mean, I don't say none of that is 100% true. I'm still doubting most of it. But after that, his experience came and strongly. So basically, he just lost it and went to the place I went prior. So coincidence or whatever it is, I don't know. But after that experience, I realized, I started asking shamans, like, what do I do with this? Is this normal? Does it ever happen? And they basically said, you need to drink a lot of ayahuasca and it will teach you what to do. Hmm. You know, ayahuasca, hey, ambiwasca, there's different many names, but it's the same medicine. Hmm. And I basically listened to them and started drinking it more and more often. And I thought, like, what is the easiest way for me to start working with the medicine and giving people healing without actually becoming proficient, you know, in this healing art? Because it's complex, you know, shamans and titans, it takes them 60, 70 years for some of them to become shamans, you know. What can I do? And I thought, I live in a finca and I have this nice big space. Why don't I host retreats? And I started doing that, started small. And then slowly expanding, but it all began with an ayahuasca experience in the jungle and a very spiritual experience. I'm not a very spiritual guy, and even though I work with it, I still doubt a lot of things. But I'm like taking like careful steps. I don't want to be seen, you know, as like somebody who lost touch with reality. I still try to like ground some of the things I explained in like scientific research and stuff like that. But I think I'm afraid every day I become more and more spiritual. So
I don't think it's a problem becoming more spiritual, but it is interesting to know that someone from such a, let's say, methodical background, engineering, is now, you know, exploring an alternative. Well, maybe that is something that we can expect. I mean, that you know, your life was so constructed, it was so within confines that maybe, you know, you were reaching for something else. But I have one question about this experience with the French guy. When you sort of placed your hand on the kind of orange triangle on his forehead and placed your other hand on the ground, I guess it's a connection to, you know, Pachamama, earth, did you feel his discomfort traveling through you to the ground? Did you feel that you were his connection?
Yeah, I definitely felt something, and I felt like it was like an effort, right? I was like as if I was lifting like 50 kilos. It felt like a very, very strong effort, but not in a muscle or something like that. And I could see basically with my eye closed, I had my eyes closed, and what I could see was like this kind of jaguar pattern. Hmm. Those are the things I remember. But so since then, years have passed and I have not tried doing active healing or anything like that. Till actually the retreat that we just finished, when during the ceremony, one girl asked for my help, and I started talking to her, and she had some physical ailment, and once again, the medicine kind of told me to do something. And then we set up like a small little private ceremony with her where my focus was just her healing. But in this time, instead of like me trying to take something out of her, it was me putting like the energy from like the nature into her and like a certain part of her body. Oh, it looks like it's going to rain.
Is that thunder? Yeah. Is that thunder in Antioquia?
Yeah. Oh, it's the thunder. Yeah.
Oh,
so, yeah, but I'm not one of those people that claim I'm a shaman, I'm a healer. At best, I'm like a student, like I'm primary school kind of level. But it's definitely, this world is much deeper than just, you know, just taking the ayahuasca and healing depression. At a certain point where you reach level, when you heal yourself, the medicine will tell you to heal others. A lot of times people ask me, like, shamans, what do they, you know, they, those people, like, why do they drink for so long? Why do they keep drinking like 20, 30, 40, 50, like 1,000 times? Like, isn't that you drink it once and you get healed and you don't need to do it anymore? And the answer is that sometimes after you heal yourself, you then embark on a journey of learning how to heal others. It's like a learning experience.
So how many times then would you say, could you even remember how many times you've taken the ayahuasca or been under the influence of it?
I would say somewhere around 40.
It's a lot. Yeah. I mean, when we
within 3 years, so It's definitely not a lot, because some titles report drinking it for 15, 20 days in a row. When they have like a very difficult case of like a very sick person they need to heal, basically it's like a CPR, you know, if we stop, he dies. Then they do it for a very long time.
So let's get into the basics of this right from the beginning. I mean, is there a difference then between yahe and ayahuasca? Because yahe is, of course, the term in Colombia, and ayahuasca more in Peru, and I don't know Ecuador or anywhere else, but is there a difference between the two brews?
Yeah, there's a slight difference. So first of all, ayahuasca or yahe, or like the taita that we're working for working with us, taita is a name for the shaman, for those who don't know, in Colombian indigenous languages, that's how they call their shamans, taitas or maimas, if those are the feminine ones. From their tribe, it's called Inga tribe, and they call it ambiwaska. So there are many different names. But the difference between ayahuasca, Peruvian ayahuasca, and Colombian ayahuasca, or jahe, is the activator plant. Mm-hmm. So there is one plant that basically disables your body's ability to absorb DMT quickly, or like metabolize DMT quickly. And then there's a plant that actually provides the DMT. So in Peru, they use a plant called chacruna, and in Colombia they use a plant called chagro, but those are the DMT plants. It's a bush. It's pretty much a leaf of a bush. But the main plant, the most, because there's a lot of plants that do DMT in the nature, like a lot of them. But the main plant that deactivates the absorption and the metabolism of the DMT is the ayahuasca one, the Banisteriopsis capi, and that's the same, and that's the bulk of the brew.
And that's the vine.
Yeah.
Okay. And so you got that. And then, I mean, obviously the taita, the shaman, he knows how to make this over many years. He's the one that does it. And when you like say, I mean, you said you're like a primary school level, but is there a period of time that you should wait to take it? So you take it one day, then should you wait a couple of days for the effects to go down before taking it again? I mean, talk to us a little bit about the security and the safety issues around this.
It depends. There are like different schools of thoughts. And as I say, depending from going from tribe to tribe, different names, different traditions. And what we personally do with our shaman is we do a 1 week retreats, which include five ceremonies. We do first three ceremonies in a row during the night. Then we take a break and a rest for one day and night, and then we do two more ceremonies during the day. In my experience working with that, a lot of people, especially foreigners, come for one day. They like to come for one day, drink ayahuasca, and they want to see visions and then leave. And if they don't see visions, they get very frustrated. And that's why a lot of shamans add some other things to ayahuasca to make them more, to give them more visions, which is dangerous. Mm-hmm. But back to the subject, if you do 3 nights or like 5 nights, we never have even a single person that does not get the healing experience they expect. Be it, you know, seeing something or feeling something or understanding something. But if we used to do 2-night retreats, and there would always be at least like 20-30% of people that were, you know, frustrated because they did not really get there. So in my experience, with every night you go slightly deeper, and it's beneficial to the point where, you know, after about a week, obviously your body gets exhausted, your mind gets exhausted, because every night or most of the nights you purge, you vomit or, you know, you have diarrhea. And if you purge, you lose, you know, electrolytes, and it gets tiring because you pay for the spiritual experience, not only with your money, but also with your sleep and with like your digestion, because you cannot eat 3 times a day. You normally eat maybe 2 times a day if you're lucky, because you can't, before drinking, you need to fast for about 8 hours. But trust me, it's worth it. And we now have like a collection of maybe 50 videos of people just very happy. Giving feedback. And, you know, the phrase that's commonly heard is like, change my life, you know, discover God, you know, get reconnected. So it's worth it. It's painful though.
Big phrases. I mean, change my life, discovered God. Can you kind of describe a little bit of the experiences or visions that people maybe have shared with you?
I can tell you about like general what can happen. So the curious thing about ayahuasca is that it's very unpredictable. Like you can drink the same cup, 10 different times and have a different effect, absolutely different. Like within those 30, 40 times that I've drank it, I never had the same experience twice. You can feel auditory hallucinations. You can feel visual hallucinations. You can completely dissolve your ego and disappear and go to another planet. You can talk to your ancestors. You can, you know, feel emotions. You can release trauma. You can, there's just so much things that can happen. It can be physical healing, mental healing. You can just go and meet God. You can go and be in the jungle. There's like different worlds, different levels you can go to. I mean, the subject is deep. Like once you open that door of perception, like this change states of consciousness, there's, I think it almost feels deeper than this reality we exist in sometimes. So yeah, it's very, very varied, the effects.
So for you, example, what about do you get, let's say, this door of perception, so sort of like the Aldous Huxley description, but do you find yourself transported to another place, like another actual physical location, a jungle, or do you see elements from your past, or do you see things in the future? What perhaps can you share with us?
Any of those you mentioned, but not on the same time. So I had all of those you just mentioned, but on a separate occasions. One that was, I think, very useful. One of the last ceremonies I drank, maybe three nights ago or so. I was feeling, you know, you go to the space with a lot of beauty. Like you just get bombarded with beauty, like beauty, mm-hmm. beauty. And it's so much, it's even though it's a positive emotion, it gets uncomfortable. So it was a very emotional night for me. And then this childhood memory arose, like a very traumatic memory of like a conflict between people where I was involved. And it was just very painful. And then it all just condensed, this like this negative moment, the emotions, it just condensed in my stomach, and then I vomited. So in Colombian tradition, indigenous tradition, they don't say vomit as in vomitar. They said aliviar, as in like alleviate, basically, because that's how it feels like. You get, you feel like you're releasing emotions through physical substance of your vomit, which is strange to explain. But when you experience it, it just makes sense. As I know, you said you never vomited, so you never released, or maybe there's nothing to release.
Well, so. I'm pure. So that, yeah. Well, I don't know. I honestly think I
just saw a halo around there.
That's right. You can see it with your healing skills. You can see the aura of goodness. But no, I participated in this a very long time ago, 2002 or 2003 or something. And it was in Iquitos in Peru. And I had actually been asked by a friend's parents to accompany her because she was from Iquitos in Peru and wanted to explore her culture because that's where she's from. And she said, it'll be so much safer. The parents said it will be so much safer if you were to accompany her, because having like a man there, we know that nothing will happen to our daughter. Which, although I thought, because sometimes there had been cases of like abuse, I think, of women under the influence. But if, again, if I'm affected, then how am I going to look after her anyway? But equally so, I guess it was just a sort of, it was a deterrent. And I actually didn't know very much about it. So I then spent the next few days reading. And I was like, well, you know what? Okay, I'll have a try. And yeah, I had images from my past. That's what I saw. It was things from the past, people who I had not thought about. And couldn't kind of remember their faces or their names, and hadn't thought. And that's what I saw. And I was, while we were in sort of like a hut in a room, the hut changed into a jungle scenario. All I really remember is that the taste was just revolting. And the shaman, I think his name is Shaman Fernando, blowing the tobacco on me and making the sign of the cross on the back of my neck. And there were some spooky moments. I'm not going to lie when I thought about it later, when we discussed the reflections later, but I don't know. I think that was that. I'm not sure about again. It's been a long time, but
can I ask a question?
Go for it.
Was the things you're seeing, were they like passing like quickly, like one after another, like faces, moments, or was it slow?
Slow.
Okay.
How do you interpret that?
Because a lot of times when you drink for the first time, you have exactly that effect. You just see things and see images and memories and like slow fragments of your memories, and just they just come and come and come, like, you know, 1,000 in one in each given minute. And like I tried to understand why and why this happens, and then one type explained to me very well. It's like when you're like scanning your computer for viruses and just flashes the files.
Yeah,
that's what the ayahuasca is doing. It's basically scanning you for garbage, and then when it finds like a piece, it like focuses in on it. If you have a purpose and you like you're diametrically focused on that, you just go there directly if you're lucky. So something similar, is being reported.
I like this description. It makes it very clear to me. I can see the file boxes going through. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so
it's like an antivirus.
Yeah. I have a question for you then, because I mean, honestly, you're about the most knowledgeable person I know in this topic. But so do people, because we were all in the room together, and there were three or four Peruvians who'd come from Cusco. And they were there to cure alcoholism. They'd obviously been, it's very much their sacred culture. And they really went for it when it was the vomiting stage. They really, like, I think they forced. And there was a French lady who I think had been practicing for some time, and then me and my friend as well. But when we met up later, or the next day, or whenever it was, to discuss our feelings and what we saw, I get the impression that there was some sort of combination of experiences, because we were all in the same kind of hut. Because, and here's the spooky, and this is the way you put it, the woo-woo, everyone there saw like a spirit looking at me. Everyone there, they all said, we saw a woman looking at you affectionately. And the description was that of my, my long deceased mother. So that was, that was pretty unnerving.
Getting goosebumps right here.
Yeah, a little bit. So have you had that experience where people kind of connect?
Absolutely. That's where we come to woo stuff. And as I say, I have to believe in it more and more because just how often it happens and how much sense it makes. So when I was talking about this, like why people keep drinking and like what are the stages from going from being healed to learning to becoming a healer, there's a stage which is called like servicio. It's basically when you come to the ceremonies and you drink the full cup or maybe less and you help other people. There are people that can come and be in the group and experience the experiences of other people and help them. They can even vomit for the other people and they can basically help other people in the ceremony. So it's so common. It's not even considered, you know, a rare occasion. And people seeing or feeling similar stuff or the energies being shared, or that's very common. I've never heard anyone describe, I've heard people describing seeing same things and more than one person seeing something that should not be there. You know, it's easy to say one is crazy, but then two are probably not. But seeing spirits together, not really. Separately, yes. But seeing other stuff that should not be there together, yes, that happens. Speaking about spirits, that's why you need a shaman, a good professional taita, because he will protect you from that. Because the way they explain it is, when you have a bonfire and something happening, the like loose spirits around from the nature, they'll be attracted to it and they'll want to come and check it out. And if you don't have some form of protection, you know, you open your soul during the experience, and some instead of like cleaning some garbage, some other, you know, maybe bad, ill-willing spirit comes and joins you for the rest of your life, or maybe even for generations, because some of the stuff you're purging is not from your life, it may be from your ancestors.
Interesting. So it's maybe something you're carrying, an inheritance of bad spirits. Interesting that. So, but you touched on the importance of a good shaman and, you know, a knowledgeable, well-trained shaman. Can we get into we have to discuss, because, you know, I saw your note on Facebook saying you'd want to be on a podcast, and then someone responded, I guess in Medellin, saying, you know, you're a qualified, that just means you're a qualified drug dealer or something like that. How do you respond to those kind of criticisms?
Yeah, we get that a lot, and I don't judge those people too much, because I used to think in the same way. I thought that pretty much every drug is heroin. Like, you know, you'll start taking it and you'll get addicted and end up dying under the bridge. You know, that was my impression. I have not done any drugs till about 3-4 years ago. I only tried marijuana first, maybe a couple years ago. So I was very, very like limited in my, you know, openness to those compounds. But my answer always is, before becoming a drug, when, you know, Nixon's administration banned all those because people didn't want to go fight in wars, it was a medicine for thousands of years. So some people say, some scientists say that ayahuasca has somewhere between, it's about 5,000 to 8,000 years old. So, and it's been used as medicine all that time. And only last, you know, 50 years, it's been called drugs by some people, who predominantly people who never use it, but the indigenous people kept using it still. It's their number one medicine, because it's the, you know, the grandmother or grandfather, depending on the tradition, because not only it heals you directly, but it can also show you what you need to do to heal or which plants you need to use to heal.
And I do have to mention the absolute tragedy of the young boy, because I reported on it here as a journalist. I reported on it, the English boy from, I think, Bristol, Henry Miller, who was, it must have been around 10 years ago now, but I was reported on it for the BBC. And actually, I knew the owner of the hostel as well, down in Putumayo. What happened to him? Because it was... there's a lot of I think things didn't fit for me in the story. So I don't, what happened to poor Henry Miller?
So if that's the story I've heard about, because somebody told me about a story of a white guy, you know, in the Mocoa area of Putumayo, mm-hmm. who basically died. And if that's the same one, if it's not a different one, then what they later on found that he had some cocaine in his system. And so what happens commonly, and that's why we included in like introduction in our retreat, is that people need to know that if you take ayahuasca, like some people get drunk and then they take cocaine to, you know, sober up. And some people do ayahuasca and they start getting, you know, a very negative feeling experience because, you know, they're processing trauma or something like that. And then they want to get out of that experience and they take cocaine and it can cause a heart attack or some long-term damage to the health. But speaking of, not knowing enough about this specific situation, what happened to this Henry Miller guy, speaking about like dangers of ayahuasca in general, there are three things that can happen. Yeah. One is you have a bad shaman, basically a shaman that does not know what he's doing or maybe doing something actively, you know, against you or trying to hurt you. That's one situation. Like you can like get lost in that spiritual space and have no one to save you or bring you back. The second is you have a shaman that makes a bad medicine, using wrong plants or just adding specific plants. Like they, as I mentioned, some foreigners, they treat ayahuasca as a, you know, and like something to entertain themselves, you know, see some images. They don't really treat it seriously. So when they come to the retreat, all they want is to see like pretty pictures, like kaleidoscope sort of in their head and go away. And when they don't see it, they get frustrated, they complain. So some shamans, to make sure everyone sees the images, they add another plant called borrachero to ayahuasca to make it more visual. That's the plant they make scopolamine from. And yeah, you'll get visions 100%, but it's a dangerous mix. For some people, it can kill them as well. Or they go crazy, run away in the jungle and die there, you know, because they don't know how to be there. And the third is when people don't follow the rules and they come and they don't follow the diet. They take some medicines like SSRI antidepressants can be extremely dangerous in a mix with ayahuasca. But there's many, like in our Facebook group, I always send people the link of counterindications with the medicine. The list has like 1,000 items. You need to make sure you're not breaking the rules. But if all of those three are followed, so good shaman with good intention, good medicine, basically everything from planting the seed and then harvesting the plant 5 to 8 years later and preparing the medicine and then giving it, all done by the same person. And then if the person who visits the retreat follow the rules, is not taking any medicines, it's extremely safe. The ayahuasca is extremely safe. So I've done it many times, and we have now had more than 10, you know, retreats with a lot of people coming, and you know, that's a lot of nights of a lot of people drinking ayahuasca, and nothing really ever happens that, you know, you can say anything. The only thing that happens is the healing, right? Mm-hmm. Nothing negative happens.
So it's good for treating depression, for sort of, I guess, hidden trauma in people's past. But how is it made? I mean, you talked about the mix of the vine and the sort of the other things, but is it like put in a big pot and boiled for days, or how is this made?
Yeah, it's a brew. So it's a mix of Banisteriopsis capi and the chagro plant. So they take the vine, they cut it in pieces, and then they mesh it with those like wooden hammer looking thingies. It's a very labor intensive process. Then they put it together with the leaves of the chagro in the huge jugs, and then they boil it. Mm. Then they boil it, they sample it, they boil it, add some more based on what's necessary, and keep adding more water. The water evaporates, and they keep adding more. It evaporates again. So it's a lot of wood burning, and it's a ceremony in itself. It lasts 3 days and nights, and the shaman keeps drinking the medicine throughout this time and, you know, like charging it with the good healing properties. It's relatively simple from the basics of it. You just add the two and you boil them together, but the ritual itself is a bit more complex.
But it's easy. I mean, honestly, the ritual is important. This is a sacred you know, original medicine. This is not something that's just sort of cooked up to provide a hallucinatory experience. That's what I, you know, when people ask me about it, and I said, well, you need to approach this as if not as a tourist, you know, as it is something sacred. It is something of this nature. And I think that's when you start to look from that perspective, you're going to find the taitas or shamans who are providing that service, rather than, you know, I was not so long ago, seven, eight years ago, the last time I was in Cusco in Peru, and I just saw the signs everywhere for it. You know, obviously, as it was clearly becoming, or it had become a bucket list thing for backpackers. So therefore, it was just sort of a legal experience, you know?
That's a good segue into subject about comparing Colombia and Peru regarding the ayahuasca.
Okay.
So when I first came to Colombia, like I already knew about ayahuasca and I was kind of curious. It was like in the back of my mind, but I just did not know it exists here. It was like Peru. Peru is where you do ayahuasca and there's nowhere else. But what I eventually found out that not only it's as traditional here as in Peru, it may be even more traditional and more powerful, the brew itself, because I've been explained by the shamans that because basically so many people came to Peru to drink the medicine, they cut down all the older vines, the older is the vine, the stronger is the medicine. Mm-hmm. It's actually cultivated. It's not like you can find it in the wild, but most of it is cultivated. Like my tate has like 3 hectares of his own ayahuasca that was probably planted, you know, by his grandparents. And he keeps planting more and they harvest it. It's very sustainable. But you need a plant to be at least 2 years old, but the older, the better. And like in Colombia, you still find like 8-year-old vines that just give you, they're just more, they have more wisdom, you know, because they're older, at least, you know, that's how I understand it. And in Peru, those are no longer available because basically so many tourists, and it became so mainstream and also much more expensive than here. Here it's still, you can still find a shaman that will give you the medicine for free if you go to the right place, because they're still connected with the original intention. But in Peru, it's basically just a business. I mean, there's nothing wrong with making a business around it and giving people more comfort and more security to experience that, as well as, you know, facilitation and integration in English. But some prices in Peru are ridiculous. Like this retreat, we had a couple that went to some retreat and it was $3,000 to $4,000 for a week. That's about 10 times more than we charge. And they said they had a better experience with us.
All right. So, well, yeah. Let's talk about this. Your retreat is called Ayahuasca in Colombia. So you can look it up on the web, online. It's ayahuascaincolombia.com. So tell us about you have retreats almost a couple of times a month, because I was looking online and you said you've done a lot. You don't want to become, you know, having huge retreats. So I think you've got a guest limit, haven't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we at the moment the limit is 15 people to make it more personal. And if we get to our capacity, and let's say 2 weeks a month is not enough, then we'll do 3 weeks a month till we get to 4 weeks a month. And then actually, I'm in the process now of acquiring some big piece of land in the picturesque part of Antioquia with the river and waterfall. And then we'll just so what most retreats do, they basically get to a point where, you know, they're too busy and they have too much people, and then they just start raising the price and then they end up doing the same amount of work and making more money. And I, you know, it's a very convenient model, but what I would like to do is, instead of doing that, when we get to the capacity, build another medicine house and get another taita, build another team, and then just have like several ceremonies simultaneously happening at the same time. I think you can get up to 50 people per ceremony if you have a right team, but more than that is a bit too much, because I've been to ceremonies with like 120 people and like you barely see Taita, like he or she just passes you briefly, and there's not much time for healing. So yeah, it's complicated how to balance the money making and the healing and all those factors together. But I'm working on it. At least it's an exciting job.
Well, I would say that the balance is so important because you don't want to be seen as someone who's creating a whole economy and a massification of something of this nature. I mean, you mentioned 120 mm-hmm. people that you went to a ceremony. I mean, that to me just seems out of control. And especially in this day and age when we don't want to be cooped up with a lot of people, you know, that's one of the things as well, you know, where mm-hmm. we're in a pandemic, we want to be with fewer people and with more space. So I think these are obvious considerations. So when do we expect your new place to be ready?
If we're lucky, maybe a year and a half from now, maybe two. It's a big job. Yeah. So what I'm planning to build is build a little tribe of people living, coming, staying, doing the medicine, and then living, sharing the space together, working together. So it's not just the medicine, but the medicine is at the core. And to note something about the whole, you know, business part of it and how to combine the money and spirituality. It's not easy, but in my understanding is as long as the healing is your priority number one and the money is your priority number two, then the medicine itself will help you. And it sounds strange, but after I started working with the medicine, like there, such thing as synchronicities started happening more and more often, and I consider this podcast to be one of them as well. Like the universe sort of conspires to give you opportunity to, let's say, I wanted to buy a land to build a retreat, and then a person comes and says, "How about I invest in your business a lot of money and we do it together?" Or, you know, you need something and it just magically comes to you. It's so strange, but it's hard to ignore as of now, you know.
This is not the voice of an engineer. This is no longer the voice of an engineer.
Definitely.
So yeah. Tell us a little bit. I mean, we're having to wind down because, you know, we could talk for too long. But I think, I mean, because you've got this new 60 hectares of land and you're going to be building this new place, I guess, let's say 2024, we'll have it, see it ready. You must be anticipating, you know, waves of sick people wanting to come and confront their trauma. What I mean, aside from the pandemic, where do you think this is coming from? Or do you think maybe Colombians with all of this post-traumatic stress disorder, which I do believe that the mm-hmm. whole country is suffering. Do you think that you're going to be appealing to a national market or always an international market?
I don't know where this realization came to me during the ceremony, or maybe just my logical mind thinking about it, but there's a mental health crisis happening now in the world, in Colombia, North America, you know, everywhere. Maybe even less so here, because at least here people still have like Institute of Family and they have support, you know, from the family. But in like North America and Western Europe, it's pretty much gone. People are alone. People are sad. Every third person has depression. So what I expect is that there will be like a huge wave of people. Like when, let's say, people come to me and they get healing and they're very grateful, and then they tell more people, and then more people come, and it creates this chain reaction that eventually, you know, everyone and his grandma will know about that, and they will want to go and experience that. So I anticipate like a wave of people coming here for the healing, which is scary in a way, but in the other way, it's amazing, because I think it's a great opportunity for Colombia as a country to rebrand itself from a place where people go to have fun or where cocaine comes from, to a place where people come to get meaningful healing. And speaking of things like depression, I've seen it myself. You know, people heal their depressions for many years, or at least put it in remission. People come sometimes with they basically say, you know, I'm about to kill myself, like I don't want to live anymore. And then a week later, they're like, yeah, you know, I kind of want to live again. Thank you. You know, people heal addictions, traumas, phobias, you name it. And even if you're, let's say, apparently healthy on the surface, you know, we all carry a lot of stuff. It's hard to live a life in this planet without getting traumatized some way or another. So the wave is coming, in my experience, unless something crazy bad happens like World War III. But after that, there will be a wave eventually of even more people to be healed. But our doors are open. You know, it doesn't matter where you're from, what religion you have, or what color of skin, or sexuality. You know, you come and you get healing from the ayahuasca if you can make it here.
Have you had someone turn up saying, "I don't want to live anymore"? I mean, that's,
yes,
really.
Two retreats ago, a guy came to our retreat, and he actually. So when I said that, you know, you don't mix ayahuasca with cocaine because it might kill you, what he did was take some cocaine during the ceremony, because he said he wanted to die. I'm like, why on the earth would you like to die during our retreat or on our hands? You know, imagine the consequences. But later on, we spoke, and he got some progress because he suffers from depressions and, you know, addictions and diabetes and a lot of things. He's like an unhealthy person, but he, after the retreat, he had found some strength to basically go to a rehab and start working on himself. And yeah, he did say that, you know, he kind of feels like living again. He doesn't want to die anymore. So he wants to give it a fight again. And I hope he makes it, you know.
I don't even want to consider the repercussions. And also, you know, someone wishing to die is one thing, of course, and a tragedy in itself, just the thought, but also in your retreat. I mean, that's the end of it. I mean, that's the end of every plan and your rebranding of Colombia. You become another, you know, bad news story out of this country. You have to
exactly.
be very, very careful, very careful.
Yeah, well, we do make people sign the papers that says, you know, they don't have such and such compounds in their bloodstream, so that would say probably protect us legally. But if, you know, if you get a bad reputation, it's very hard to get through it. But it's hard to protect yourself from all the bad, and there's a lot of risks in that industry. But it's still definitely worth doing it, because for every difficult situation, there is hundreds beautiful healing moments and happy people.
Well, that's, I mean, a nice. I mean, you genuinely believe, you genuinely know from your experiences that you're helping people. I can hear that in the way that you talk to us and the way you're sharing these experiences and how your life has completely turned around. So I think that's as good a place as any to bring this to a close and say, listen, everybody, of course, if you are interested, do your research, read up, follow the guidelines. I suppose you could even get in touch with Sam at ayahuascaincolombia.com for the feedback and being able to talk about these things. Is it appropriate for you? Don't just sign up because you want some cheap thrill.
Treat the ayahuasca retreat you're going to as a visit to a hospital, where, you know, sometimes some procedures might be painful, but yeah, you'll find a healing experience in them. And yeah, if you want to find more about us, I recommend people join our group on Facebook, which is Ayahuasca in Colombia. So there you'll see, you know, the stories, the reviews, the photos from the events. And it's a good way to like quietly follow and get to know more about the medicine just passively. And when you're ready, then find the ayahuasca. If not with us, I still recommend. I still think there's a lot of good, authentic Taitas in Colombia and other retreats. I'm not saying we're the only ones, but we are the only ones I can be responsible for. So, yeah, definitely find the healing. It's an impressive medicine. One of the top three things about Colombia in my list, you know, weather, cheap prices and amazing access to all those ancestral medicines.
There we go. Ancestral medicines is a good way of putting it, definitely. Well, Sam, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for sharing with us. And of course, if you fancy getting in touch with him, that's the Facebook page, Ayahuasca in Colombia, or the website, ayahuascaincolombia.com. Again, Sam, it's been really fascinating to discuss this with you and to hear your life story. And of course, the other stories that have surrounded you now in these last few years, and that you are making this your path. This is it. This is what you want to do. You want to be on your plot of land out there with the waterfall and the river, and providing, I guess, healthcare, a degree of healthcare through ancient sacred medicines to others. So incredibly upbeat to be able to talk about this. Thank you for your time, and thank you for sharing with us.
Thank you, Richard. And as I said, when we first talked, you're invited to one of our retreats for free when you're ready. And I'm pretty sure that within 5 days we'll see you puke and release something. I'm not buying the whole purity.
I'm totally pure, and everybody will know that I'm totally pure. But thank you for your time. This has been episode 420 of the Colombia Calling podcast. I've been Richard McCall talking to Sam Liev of Ayahuasca in Colombia. We'll be back next week, of course, with more people talking about something Colombia related. Do check us out on patreon.com/Colombia Calling. You can sponsor the podcast there and help us continue to bring out high quality podcast interviews, of course, and the news report, the news briefing every Monday with Emily Hart. Thank you again, and goodbye. Ya está.